Blog Talk Radio.
Born escaping the Ego Boost Challenge.
Hey, 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 everyone. Welcome, welcome, and happy Thursday. You know what tonight is, and that is time for Real Talk with Kaylin and Desiree. This program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on as well as a vehicle to drive your goals, check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now let's talk. Kaylin Patterson, how are you doing this evening, my friend?
I am doing just fine. Not feeling a lot better from the last 2 weeks. Spider-Man is back in action.
Did you have any super pole skills that came out of that spider bite?
I'll save it for when I actually try that class.
Well, I look forward to that. For those of us who may not, those of you that may not have been with us, we had some great gals, Amber Cahill and Tristabel Aquila, who are both professional pole athletes, on with us last Thursday. And so we were giving Kaylin a hard time about his spider bite, and maybe he would get some super skills, some super pole dancing skills from that. But looks like that remains to be seen. So just a couple things before we get started. And we have an amazing guest this evening, so we do want to get to him. But I just want to let you know, if you want to catch last week's show, please do check our archive at Blog Talk Radio. Just search for P4P Muscle Real Talk, and you'll have a full list of all of our programs that we have out there. You can download them and listen along. And also, as far as tonight goes, if you have a question, give us a call. We want to hear from you, and we'll do our best to get to you and get you on the air and get your question answered. Give us a call at 657-383-1476, or if you are following along on the webpage, our webpage at Blog Talk Radio, there is a comment box towards the bottom of that page. You can type to us there, and we'll be sure to get that question to our guest. If we don't get an answer tonight, we'll definitely post the answer so that you will have that at a later time. So with that, I am very excited to introduce Brian Melanson. He is an amazing coach, an up-and-coming virtual trainer, often referred to as a wizard and or an alchemist when it comes to training and the science of nutrition. Brian, welcome to Real Talk. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you all so much for having me on your podcast. This is actually my first podcast interview, so I'm pretty excited.
Well, wow. Awesome.
I mean, if you hear dry heaving in the background, that's just my butterflies.
No reason to be nervous. You have got this. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Brian? How you got started in bodybuilding contest prep, being a nutritionist, and just tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So C620 Nutrition is the name of my contest prep company, and I'm a sports nutritionist. But C620 actually originated just out of a passion that came from personal training at the time. I was working for, Des, you know Bobby Hines. Bobby Hines owns a couple Anytime Fitnesses down here in Louisiana. I was working for Bobby Hines at the time, fantastic boss. You know, thank God every day for him. But I was working for Bobby at the time, and me and a couple of my friends, we really started getting into bodybuilding, and just something about nutrition really fascinated in me. And the type of personality I am, whenever something interests me or I get something piqued my interest, I'll become obsessed with it. But luckily, my OCD compulsions have not been limited to a 3 to 6 month span, and my pursuit of nutrition and training knowledge is something that I'm continually obsessing about. And so C620 was just born really out of wanting to understand the human body better and wanting to learn how to push it better. And before it actually even became an LLC or an official company, my general manager at the time, Josh Bailey, I was like, bro, let me prep you for a bodybuilding show. He was the general manager there. I was the head trainer there at any time. In Baton Rouge, and Josh let me prep him for a show, and he ended up winning his class, and came in really good shape and came in really hard. And then the next year, like I said, it was just for fun at the time. And then the next year, another really good friend of mine, Ethan, Ethan let me prep him for his show. He actually competed in 4 shows that year, and he actually ended up winning all 4 shows and came in super shredded, shredded glutes, just like Josh the year before. And, you know, just my name slowly grew from there. And where C620 actually really took off, it's actually a really interesting story. And looking back, you can just see how, you know, God's hand was all over it. Because this situation is just, it's far too wild to have just happened any other way. So like I said, working for Bobby at the time, he was an amazing boss to work for, because every year he would bring someone in that specialized in something. And I was real big on science and research, and a guy I came across at the time, Lane Norton, I liked a lot of his articles
wow.
he was putting out. And yeah. And, yeah, Big Lane, and I was liking a lot of the articles he put out, and I actually read his thesis paper and stuff from when he was an undergrad in his PhD research paper. So I really liked Lane at the time. Didn't know him, but really liked his work. So anyway, Bobby ended up getting in contact with Lane to come on down to be our guest speaker that year. So Lane flew down for the weekend, and it just so happened that one of our clubs was under construction where the event was supposed to be held. And so me and Lane actually had to drive to a Franklin location, which is about 2 hours away. So over the course of driving back and forth and spending the weekend together, we became friends, and he saw the type of work I was putting out and my passion for science. And like I said, we got to know each other, and he got to know my character and my heart for the sport. And a few weeks later, he emailed me, and he asked me if I wanted to be on his recommended coaches list. And, of course, that
you're like,
threw me through the moon. And then he mentioned me on one of his video logs. And from there, C620 just really blew up, and it went from being, you know, just a local contest prep company to being an international contest prep company over the course of, you know, 2 years. And so, you know, that's really how C620 became what it is today. And now, you know, C620 is primarily run off referrals from clients that have worked with me. So that's sort of the origin of C620 in a nutshell.
Wow, that is pretty amazing. And I have to say, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, but and you're still a relatively young guy. I want to say you're only what, about 27-ish, somewhere around there.
I sound like a kid saying this, because kids always like round up their age, but I'll be 27 on November 1st, so I'm 26 at the moment, but almost 27 in 3 weeks.
I think that makes it even more impressive, but happy early birthday, because really I have quite seen anybody take the approach that you take to contest prep and nutrition, and you've gotten it down at an early age at this point, which just leads me to believe that, as you said, with your passion for science and just the way that you go after research and staying on top of everything that's out there, that it's only going to get better from here. So, again, kudos to you. I think that's pretty amazing.
Thank you. I would hardly say that I'm on top of it, though. You know, this is one of those industries where no matter how much you learn, there's just so much more, you know. And so, you know, it's really great working with so many people and working with such a diverse crowd, you know, but I don't think I'll ever be at the point where I think like, oh, I've got this, you know, because I can, you know, we've had a really good year this year, you know, 8 or 9 overall wins, you know, 3 people turn pro this year. But no matter how many overall people win or how many people turn pro, it's the preps that don't go 100% the way I want to, you know, that keep me up at night, you know. So I don't think I'll ever say, oh, I've got this down pat. When I do, then my ego is outgrowing my talent and it's time for me to retire, you know. But I do appreciate the compliment, but I still have a lot to learn.
Okay.
Well, very good.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Okay. It's such a small world. The reason I said, oh, wow, when you said about Lane Norton, because I'll never forget the only year I went to the Arnold, he was the reason I went, because he's friends with a fella that basically got me started in the bodybuilding, and that's Ryan Doris. And Ryan
was going to
be there. Yeah, Ryan was going to be there, and Lane was going to be there, and they're going to be in the same booth, and I was just so elated. And everybody's telling me all these different names. And I can't tell you the number of celebrities and big top name people that were there. But the only one I wanted to take a picture with, other than Ryan, was Lane. And I was just so happy to do that. And you know, if you go back in some of my pictures, you'll see that. It's either on the Midwest Muscle page in the pictures, or it's in my personal profile pictures. But I was just so happy. But there was something that... And Dr. Joe and Corey Probst all were doing, to me at the time, that was just so ahead of what was being taught. And that's what you're saying, is they were using actual facts and science, and a lot of times they were discrediting themselves in the process of trying to figure things out. And most people wouldn't even admit things like that. And these guys were doing it all the time. So, you know, to be in that realm of basically the new school, which is old school, is using facts instead of bro science. How do you go about dealing with people that have been so set in stone with things that appear to be working but aren't really?
Well, that's an interesting question, because you know, the only reason science keeps advancing is because people are curious about why something is working, you know. So even though I do have a different approach to nutrition, I still think your foundation of food needs to be whole single-ingredient foods that are micronutrient-dense. So in that, you know, so your question of how do I go about shifting people's perceptions of what's working, what's not. It's the biggest thing, man, and the biggest thing I do for any client is really collecting and analyzing data over time. And, you know, visualize each person or prep as a scientific experiment. You know, their nutritional consistency has to be the factor that's unchanged in order to document how their body is responding, you know. The biggest thing is, you know, even when taking a new approach or trying to find out what works, is having that nutritional consistency and documenting how the human body is responding. Because on a primal level, we all pretty much function the same. But on a different scale, we all need a program that is tailored just specifically to us, you know, because there's a big difference between effective and optimal. You know, effective means it'll work, you know, but in bodybuilding and trying to get to essential levels of body fat and trying to put on as much muscle as you can in a short amount of time, you know, you don't need effective, you need optimal. And when you're dealing with optimal, that really comes down to, okay, what's working for my body? What does my body need, you know? And that's why, you know, training and nutrition is such a big marriage. So you have to overview it holistically instead of saying one piece of the puzzle is the corporate, you know? So when it comes down to changing people's perceptions of nutrition about what's actually working, what's actually not, it's really let's look back at the data and see what kind of progress you've made, and then look at everything holistically as far as, you know, your energy levels, your sleep patterns, how much lean mass you're putting on, you know, what's your current body fat, are you gaining, losing, or maintaining, you know. So I'd say that's the best way, is to really analyze the data. Because if you don't know me from Adam, me just telling you something isn't going to change your intrinsic beliefs about what you perceive to be correct. Am I right?
Yes.
You know, because I'm just another dude with an opinion, just like everyone else out there. So there has to be some exploratory factor involved.
Well, that's true. And, you know, it's hard to argue with Dr. Joe. It's hard to argue with Lane. It's hard to argue with Corey, because the proof's in the pudding. So, I agree with what you're saying. And my question deals more with the people that have had their metabolisms trashed and they're willing to try one more time because, you know, they're so used to all these people that are really successful, but they're not successful because, you know, I've seen them on stage and they look phenomenal, but when you see them in the off season, you can see metabolic damage, and it's frightening.
Yeah. Rephrase your question for me. I'm not sure I'm understanding completely. I'm sorry.
Okay. When they're like Desiree has said that there are coaches out there that aren't really coaches. They're just basically taking in money, and they're willing to.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So I think what he's asking.
Go ahead, Beth.
No, I think what he's asking is just how do you go about, you know, these people that have had may have had a bad experience. How do you go about helping them to recover? What are some of the things that you're seeing, or what are some of the watchouts that athletes should be wary of or be cautious of when they're choosing a coach? And just what are some of the things that you have seen and maybe just some of the tips or success stories of how you've been able to turn some of your clients around that may have had a damaging experience prior to jumping on board with you?
Gotcha. Awesome. I'd actually like to answer this in two segments. First, the biggest thing is sure, there are people out there that probably don't have the credentials to be coaching. You know, maybe they worked with someone and then they're just replicating their experience onto someone else without taking the time to actually pursue their education and learn some nutritional science. And, you know, those are the people that that I have more of an issue with. Because, you know, if someone's going to entrust their health to you, like, it's a huge responsibility, you know.
Yes.
And that's not something to be taken lightly. So when you're looking for a coach, one thing that's obviously a good factor to have is their track record. You know, having clients that are successful, but having clients that are successful year after year. But another thing is, you know, see where they stand. You know, whenever people approach me for coaching, you know, I always encourage them to ask questions because if they ask why, I'm not going to say because I said so. You know, if I want you to do something and you ask me why, I'll explain why I want you to do it. But then it's like, okay, well, now that I explained it, now will you please do it, you know? But people should be able to explain what they're doing. You know, like Albert Einstein said, if you can't explain it simply, you don't know it well enough. So people, coaching, you should be able to explain what you're doing. But I don't, in the same breath, I don't think that means that people should question everything their coach tells them to do. But as far as, you know, being cognizant of what's going on, look at their track record. You know, see how their clients are showing up to the stage, see what their clients are saying about them, and simply question them before you invest your money into them. Now, the second part of the question I'd like to address is something you brought up is, you know, metabolic damage. I think metabolic damage is a term that's used a lot when it may not be applicable 100% of the time. And what I mean by that is metabolic damage absolutely exists, but in absolutely any diet you do, there's going to be metabolic adaptation because the human body is designed to survive. And being that its primal function is to survive, that means it's adaptable. So that includes your metabolic rate and your metabolic capacity. So as you diet down and you decrease your body fat, your body's going to understand that you're losing stored energy. So it's going to try and down-regulate your metabolism to compensate for the lower income and slow fat loss down. Because, you know, while we want to prep people as healthy as possible, if you're coming in shape to a show, you know, for a man, if you're coming in, you know, 3-5% body fat, like, that's essential level of body fat. You know, that's not healthy. You know, you can only stay there so long. So why you want to do things as healthy as possible, getting contest lean isn't healthy in and of itself. Well, that's why you don't sustain it. But as far as metabolic damage versus metabolic adaptation happens on any level of any diet. It's a physiological response to an outside stimulus being altered, okay? Now, what people need to be cognizant of, and like Ezra said, some tips for this is really you have to control those first, 4 to 8 weeks after a show, because you've been hyper-restricting yourself for so long, your body just wants to get back to its theoretical body fat set point. So, normally wherever your body maintains, that's what we like to call a theoretical body fat set point. So your body wants to get back to that level pretty quick, So whenever you start taking in more food, you're going to have brain signals going off and hormones are out of line that are constantly telling you to eat more, okay? And where a lot of people make mistakes is after the show, they binge and they binge on like sugars and sweets. And, there's tons of studies and brain scans that show like sugar has almost the same effect as cocaine on the human brain as far as pleasure endorphins, So where people go wrong is binging after a show on these sweets, and then it creates this insatiable hunger, and then your body fat just keeps shooting back up until it hits that comfort level. And, I've seen people jump back to gaining more weight than they started to prep with, in a 4 to 6 week period. Yeah, and it happens a lot. So the biggest thing is after your show, you do need to increase your food intake, and you need to increase your carbohydrate intake because, increasing carbohydrate intake will also help regulate your T3 function again and get that regulating higher, and also increase hormones that are altered during prep like testosterone and estrogen. I'm not saying carbohydrates directly, but as your body fat gets higher and your intake of carbohydrates and healthy fats rises and your body fat normalizes out, that will help get your hormone profile back optimal. But that first 4 to 8 weeks after the show, you need to incorporate more carbohydrates and more healthy fats, but you need to do it in a manner that's systematic and that's conducive to the type of training you're doing. And, not that, some people may disagree with me on this, and that's fine. If you're making everyone happy, you're doing something wrong. But if you struggle with sweets, don't put sweets around you post contest, because you're not going to be able to say no to eating a whole bag of Oreos, So the biggest thing post contest is increase your food intake. Typically for clients, what I'll do is, I try and over the course of 4 weeks, depending on obviously how much muscle they have, their metabolic rate, the type of training I have during the time, but I'll try and increase their calories, 500 to 1,000 in the course of 4 to 6 weeks after a show, but increasing those with foods that are more conducive to a healthy mindset that aren't going to promote these binges for them. And so that's really one of the biggest tips I can give is post-contest, yes, you do need to increase your food intake, and you can get away with increasing it pretty rapidly, but you need to control your food sources and be cognizant of where you're mentally weak and avoiding the habit of binge and restrict, because that's where a lot of people go wrong. They binge and restrict all off season, then they go into a prep, and sometimes preps get continually harder if you don't take care of your body in the off season, or if you do take care of yourself in the off season and keep your body fat, within a healthy range, 12 to 15%, and you take care of your improvement season and add in calories like you're supposed to, you can start your prep with a higher metabolic capacity than you were at the previous year and leaner, which means what? A better package. And that's ultimately the goal, yes, to improve every year.
And I think that's very key. That point right there that you just made, I think, bears repeating, because here's the deal. I've seen so many women that talk about how their prep went going into their first show, and they were dehydrated and their hair was falling out and they were barely eating anything. And whether it was, well, I shouldn't say it was their first show, when they were going into a show, I'm assuming it's their first show. So those are the kinds of things that I also want to make sure that our listeners understand. Those aren't good practices. If you're experiencing any of those things prior to a show, you're with the wrong coach if he's leading you down or she's leading you down that path. But to your point, once you get done with the show, it's reverse dieting is really only the tip of the iceberg, but maintaining those good habits so that you don't, I mean, granted, you're right, you're getting down, when you're getting ready to get on stage, you are, depending on what level you're competing at, you are getting down to a body fat that is not quote-unquote healthy. You can't maintain it for long, but you don't have to, you know, your suffering doesn't have to be so intense when you get there if you continue to do all the right things all the way along the path and not just like 6 weeks before or 2 weeks before or 4 weeks before or whatever it might be, but just those habits all the way around. And that food is your friend, calories can be your friend, are your friend, and so is water.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's food, you always want to have food as high as possible in a prep because, you know, training's not anabolic. You know, training's catabolic. It's breaking the muscle down. You know, food is what's anabolic. So if you can start your prep with a higher intake and lower body fat percentage, you know, that's really the key to bringing a better package and maintaining more muscle throughout the course of your prep. But yeah, you made a great point in talking about you have to do what's required in the off season to bring a better, healthier package. And a big part of that is, you know, controlling your body fat post show, because while it does hurt to be lean, you know, anyone who's ever been, you know, contest lean, it does hurt, but there's a big difference between having a prep that's on point and in congruence with your timeline versus having a prep where you're drastically having to catch up in terms of suffering.
Well, I agree. And one of the things that, you know, I really didn't start with bodybuilding. I started with martial arts. But my mother was a nurse, and she would always tell me, you know, during because I played sports year-round, you know, whatever the sport was that season that what I was doing. And she would always be so worried about my weight. And, you know, if it was jumping up too fast, it's going down too fast. But she said the body, you know, you just got to be careful with it because, you know, you don't want those extreme weight gains and weight losses because it's so hard on the internal organs that you know, you got to get basically keep you alive. And go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, especially with the extreme weight gain, you know, you know, if you go adding 40 extra pounds on your frame in a month, you know, that's really hard on your processing organs and your heart, you know. So I completely agree. Your mom's a smart lady.
Well, that's what I was going to tell you about, because I can remember the first time I started connecting with a lot of the bodybuilders on social media. A lot of them actually had me scared, and I would send them messages, you know, like when they were saying they had gained all this weight in 3 or 4 days, and I was really frightened because I you know, with the background that I had, it really worried me, and it seemed so common for everybody that nobody was really sounding the alarm.
Yeah, and you know, just touch point on you know, gaining weight very rapidly after a show, that too has to do with how you dry out as well, you know. The infamous drying out, you know. So I'm not sure, like, what bodybuilders you were talking to, but, you know, if they gained, like, an extreme amount of weight in a couple of days, you know, maybe they're very dehydrated for the show, and a big part of that is fluid with carbohydrate weight. But this is just such a fascinating sport, man. It's, that's why I love it so much. You can just never know enough, and it's so fun. Yeah, this stuff like this I just love.
Yeah. Well, I've had a passion for health and fitness all my life, obviously, but this one really draws me in because there's so many backgrounds that you get to deal with and so many personalities. That it's such a joy. And, you know, in the natural community, I'm loving how everybody connects and interconnects. And basically now, you know, with guys like you and women that are coming in like Corey with the understanding and the knowledge, you don't have to see the bad side or the dark side of it. You know, where you have the people that look great on stage, but really they're a mess because, you know, their whole prep was just awful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I'm loving the course of the conversation because we actually do have some questions that were submitted from folks out in the audience there. And one of them we already hit on was the importance of nutrition in the improvement season, which, Brian, I think you pretty much covered that. As long as you continue the good habits, nutrient-dense food, increasing calories over time, you're going to be able to start at a point where you're at higher caloric intake and you're already leaner than you were when you started the last time if you're doing all of the right things along the entire time there. So,
Correct. One of the things about bodybuilding, you know, it's a lot of people will hop into the sport because, like, they see their friend doing it. They're like, oh, I could do that. They want to compete, you know. And then they go through the ringer, and then that's why the improvement season is so hard, because they don't have that intrinsic passion for actually bodybuilding. So I think one of the biggest things to say is, like, bodybuilding, like, if you really want to, you know, because for us, this is our hobby. This is, like, what we do for fun, you know. But if you really want to improve and get better, bodybuilding is a year-round thing. It's not a 20-week thing, you know. You win your shows with how you treat the 20 weeks you're not in prep, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Great point. Another question that we have submitted has to deal with the childhood obesity epidemic in America, and that is such a broad topic that I don't have, like, one specific question to go with it, but from your perspective, especially where you come from, training and nutrition, what do we need to be doing to address this epidemic for these kids? Because they're coming in, more and more of them, younger and younger, and they're just becoming adults that are battling the same diseases. What's the solution?
I was actually really excited whenever this question was submitted, and this is something me and a couple of my friends have talked about on numerous occasions, you know. But, the obesity epidemic in America, and specifically the childhood obesity epidemic in America, like, the only way it's going to change is if the culture as a whole changes. And that, you know, that's obviously a very broad stroke. But when it comes to what we can do at home, you know, childhood obesity, this is going to – oh, man. People may not like me after this comment, but, you know, you have to be honest. Childhood obesity is a reflection of what the parents allow in the household. Children can't control what they eat, you know. So if children are raised on sugar and processed foods their whole life, which 100% are genetically modified in laboratories to make you become addicted to them, the food we eat, the processed fast food we eat, like, it's designed to make us addicted to it. Like, don't think that, like, McDonald's and these corporations don't spend, you know, millions and millions of dollars on research on how to sell more products. So, you know, if people are, and I don't have any kids, so that's why people be like, well, you don't have kids, you don't know how hard it is, but, you know, although I don't have kids, I have friends who have kids and who are living the lifestyle. You know, my buddy Jace, his daughter Addie, I don't know if she's ever, you know, I don't know if she's ever had a ding dong or a Twinkie in her life, you know, like, what Jace eats, she eats, you know. I'll go over and Addie's eating asparagus and beef and, you know, whole eggs and stuff. And she loves it because that's what she's given. That's what she's developed a taste for. And so if children grow up on processed sugary foods and they become addicted to that going into that adolescent stage of life, the disadvantage is really on the parents, and their health issues are really on the parents because children can't control what they eat. So as far as changing or where to start to change, it's got to start in the household with the parents. You know, there has to be a conscious decision that, okay, I want my child to be healthy. And people are like, well, I want to make my child happy. Well, you can implement treats and ice cream trips and days and stuff like that. But me personally, I don't think people should be feeding their kids all this processed stuff day in and day out from the start, you know. But
no,
so I think it starts at the head of the household.
I don't think that's a bad answer, and I don't think why if people are basically trying to go after you for making that statement, it's because basically they're on the wrong side of the truth. I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, that's a perfect statement.
It is. I mean,
yeah.
It is
well,
a
you know.
Statement. From the temp, I mean, and I agree. I totally agree, and I also see the other side of that argument. Not that I advocate it, but I'm a parent of three, single mom, and the part of the toughest equation is that it's less expensive and easier to feed a family, a large family, on processed food.
Uh-huh.
It's faster than it is off of fresh, and that's a societal problem. That's a cultural challenge. And just because it's there, I don't think it's the way to go, but I understand it. Parents are working more, they're home less, they need that fast solution, I get it. But at the same breath, there are also parents that are making it work. And, and you know, kids can be tough because even my kids, when I'm in contest prep, they get fed up with me. Well, we don't want to eat the way that you eat and blah, 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 and we're not bodybuilders. Well, no, you're not, but we all have lifestyle changes that we need to make. And bad habits that we need to correct. And so kids aren't always going to willingly go along with you. They're not. But as Brian said, you know, there are things that you can schedule in, treat days, this and that, occasionally bake cookies. But it's just not, it's not a staple that you keep in your house. If you want to change it,
exactly,
you do have to remove it. You have to remove it.
Yeah, so, like I said, like, you know, at some point, you know, to implement true nationwide or, you know, well, I'll even isolate it to nationwide because, you know, most countries don't have the issues that we have in America, you know, but
right,
things have to change at a corporate level, you know, but, you know, the sad realization is profit margins are never going to be tampered with. So I highly doubt that, there's going to be big corporate change, you know. And that's the thing, you know, like I don't have kids, so, you know, I don't, and I especially don't understand the aspect of being a single parent, you know, but I think that's a great, I think that could be its own movement in and of itself is, you know, how to teach people, you know, who are single parents on how to eat for X amount of dollars a week, you know?
Yeah, that would be wonderful. That would be,
well,
and
I
that's,
think,
you know, and that's a serious question that, you know, some of my clients have asked me, well, my budget is this, how am I supposed to feed my family, you know, healthy foods with just this?
Can I
that's
in?
A real question. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I jump? Okay.
Jump.
The thing, this anybody that's passionate about health and fitness is always going to be, like Brian said, covering all aspects. And that was one of the things, especially doing seminars and community service and, you know, the food pantries, is the more I got involved with health and fitness, the more I saw the crap that we were giving these people. We're not feeding them at all. We're basically killing them. And what we started doing was basically having gardens, community gardens.
Yep, community gardens.
We started a farmer's market. Everything basically coming from a shorter distance, but had more life time actually being around the people. So the potatoes, tomatoes, the beans, the corn, all of this stuff was maybe within a 5-mile radius. What the heck is going on? What is that?
I wasn't peeing. I was filling up my water. Sorry.
Oh, thank God. Thank God.
Caleb's being all philosophical over here.
I was going to say, if you don't like my state, you don't have to go into it like that.
Sorry, I was just getting some water.
And actually, that's okay because this is a topic that I'm actually very passionate about also. We could have, you know, 6 weeks of podcast on. So just needless to say, I do agree that, you know, it does need to start in the home, and that I hate to say this, but there do need to be more resources for parents, but then the parents also have to be willing to grab hold of those resources. So I understand it's a two-way street. So I'm going to jump. We have a couple more questions here that I would like to get to get Brian's opinion on before we run out of time here. The next one is a more lighthearted topic. It's hit versus list. What is that?
Yeah. This is a question I get asked about all the time, and it's really funny. Like people who are big followers in the more so natural community, like seem to have a predisposition towards like lists being the ultimate, lists being what the dummies do. You know,
Can you tell us what they stand for?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, HIIT is an acronym for High Intensity Interval Training, so HIIT, and LISS is an acronym for Low Intensity Steady State, LISS. So I believe cardio is a tool, not a fix or a staple, and it should be used as a tool, and I believe there is a time and a place for both. You know, there's some people that only do HIIT, there's some people that only do LISS. But the thing about it is, especially in prep when you have to consider all things, you know, HIIT is absolutely great. There's amazing research behind it. You know, it increases mitochondria activity over time. It'll increase mitochondria biogenesis, so you actually create more energy cells. It can increase exercise oxygen consumption for a 24-hour window, creating that, you know, you get a metabolic gap from it, so your body has to recover from it. So it's great. HIIT is fantastic. It's great for burning fat. One thing you have to consider, though, in prep and in a deficit and, you know, not eating maintenance calories and also training, weight training as well, you know, HIIT is kind of like weight training on your central nervous system as well. If you break it down, you know, you're going really hard for 15, 30 seconds and then resting for, you know, 45 seconds a minute. You know, that kind of sounds like weight training. You know, so HIIT is taxing on your central nervous system as well. And so, you know, there's only so much of a – because I really don't believe in muscular – being able to overtrain your muscle system if you're getting enough rest, sleep, and food. But in prep, you're most likely not getting enough rest. You're most likely not getting enough food. And so in prep with weight training, you have to be cognizant of how much stimulus you're putting on your central nervous system. So while I don't necessarily believe – and being able to overtrain your muscle system, I do believe in CNS overload. And you know, you'll feel like you just don't have the will to train. You know, so that's where LISS. You know, now LISS has been used for you know, however long bodybuilding's been around, and people come in shredded all the time just walking. And I think LISS is great. It doesn't require any recovery time. And, you know, people say, well, you know, well, what about, you know, like losing muscle? There's science that shows that, like, thigh diameter decrease with LISS versus HIIT, you know. If your diet's on point and your training's on point, you're really not going to lose any lean mass walking, you know. And speaking of LISS, this dives into the whole fed versus fasted thing, and a lot of research has been coming out that's saying it really doesn't make a difference. But as a coach, this is where you just sort of have to believe in anecdotal evidence as well, because a lot of science is still unproven, and a lot of stuff that we do comes from it just working. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's not proof for everything, you know, because I've had some clients who were unresponsive to fed cardio, and I just moved their walking to the morning, didn't change any training stimulus, no nutritious stimulus, and all of a sudden fat starts dropping again, you know. So while research may say, you know, it doesn't make a difference what time of day you do lifts, like, you know, anecdotal evidence says that, you know, in the morning before food may work better for some people. And so lifts versus HIIT, such an interesting topic, because people just seem to have a predisposition towards one or the other, when I think they should both be used as tools, and there's a time and a place for both of them, you know. HIT's great, but it's very taxing on your central nervous system. LISS is great, doesn't require any recovery. You know, you're strictly burning calories. And so you can pretty accurately figure out what, you know, your output. Sorry, this thing's going again. So I think HIT versus LISS, you really need to be cognizant of all the factors going into your diet and training. But you should never be geared so strongly towards a belief that if something came along that was empirical, it wouldn't change your mind, you know? Because whenever I first started C620, I'll admit it, like, the Brian I am now probably wouldn't get along with the Brian 3 years ago, you know what I'm saying? Like, when I first started C620, like, I would predominantly just do HIIT, wouldn't do any fasted lifts with clients. But as I've evolved as a coach and learned people's bodies better and just started excelling more in my craft and learning more simply, you've got to expand beyond your horizons to improve in any avenue of business or bodybuilding, you know, or anything you want success in. The biggest key is remaining novice. You know, like Alexander Pope said, it's dangerous to know a little. It's dangerous to know a lot, you know, meaning, you know, a little, you think you got everything figured out and can do everything for everyone. Or if you know a lot, then you think you don't need to learn anymore. And the biggest key to success is remaining novice, and staying humble, you know. And so I incorporate both with clients, HIIT and LISS, because I think cardio is a tool and it should be used as a tool and not a staple.
Yeah.
Very good. One last question for you that was submitted is, what is your opinion on IIFYM, if it fits in your macros?
I was super glad this was asked. So, like Des said, IIFYM is an acronym that stands for If It Fits Your Macros. It's a big dieting craze right now. I think the concept of whenever If It Fits Your Macros first came out, it and flexible dieting was synonymous. And just the culture we live in and the way the internet is today and just how people distort things, I genuinely do feel like If It Fits Your Macros and flexible dieting are now two completely separate things. So I will take flexible dieting approaches, but I do not use the term If It Fits Your Macros anymore because people misassociate it with – yeah, I will not use the term If It Fits Your Macros. I hate that term now. Because people associate it with –
because if it fits my,
like,
macros, I'm going to eat it.
Yeah, and you know, like – what it really boils down to is, you know, you are what you absorb, you know. Perfect example, I was working with a guy, and we were doing a flexible dieting approach, and now I told him the protein, carbon, fat sources I want him to use, and I gave him the protein sources that were very similar in nature as far as their macronutrient, fat content, et cetera, same thing with carbs and fat. And so he had his diet plan set up, very detailed, but, like, for a few weeks, just weren't making progress. I'm like, dude, send me, well, not a few weeks, probably two or three, yeah, probably 2 weeks. But I was like, send me a diet, like, we should be dropping pretty quickly. And he sends me his diet, and it is just junk food. I'm like, none of this is what I told you to eat. And he's like, well, hit my numbers. I'm like, it's not just about generic numbers. Well, theoretically, calories in versus calories out, yes, but, like, you have to understand that food affects your hormone profile, you know? And he also just food sources, and boom, everything started changing. And this is another one of those statements that people will disagree with, like, you know, like, oh, you can eat what you want as long as you're getting in less calories. If you're trying to be a great athlete, why would you just want to eat what you want? You know, you need to eat things that are going to help you put on muscle as fast as possible and lose fat as fast as possible. And part of fat loss is hormones, because you can have a perfect training and cardio regimen and see minimal results if your hormones aren't optimal, which is why now, like, I have a lot of people get their thyroid and their free tests checked before we get started, you know, because hormones play such an important role And, you know, if you don't believe me, just look at anyone you've ever known that's been pregnant, right? Whenever their hormones are altering, so much physiological change happens that externalizes with weight gain, mood swings. Like, so you can't tell me hormones can't affect everyone in an instant. You know what I'm saying? So I believe, like I said, I do flexible dieting approaches with people, because I believe you need to, if you're trying to be the best athlete you can, which is what we want to produce, which is why people come to me, you know, I want to be a better athlete. Okay, well, I'm going to treat you like an athlete, you know. So that's my opinion on If Fit Your Macros. I think it started out, If It Fits Your Macros and flexible dieting being synonymous with each other. But I do think the internet has distorted what If It Fits Your Macros is, and now people perceive it as I can eat whatever I want as long as I fall within these regulated guidelines, which is not the case. And ironic, because people do not need a macronutrient coach. Like, that's, you know, you don't need someone to tell you generic numbers. You need someone to help you with meal timing, carbohydrate spacing, peri-workout nutrition, and coordinating that with your training and your cardio regimen, you know. So that is my stance. I definitely love the term flexible dieting. I hate the term If It Fits Your Macros. And I probably lost some followers just now, but that's okay.
That's all right.
Or you've gained some new ones. Well, we've got just a couple minutes left. But with that, so we talked primarily, we've been talking to the bodybuilding athlete, but I also know that you have started dabbling into an arena for folks that not necessarily have a desire to become an athlete, and that's your Iron Will program. Why don't you talk to us just real briefly about that?
Okay, yeah, and thank you so much for letting me talk about it. So with C620, dealing with athletes, and I do have a branch of C620 that people that still want individualized coaching but aren't looking to get on stage, and that's called the Better Life Division. And I have a coach, Gretchen Quast, who heads that up, and she's fantastic. But one thing, you know, my business partner with Iron Will Lifestyle, Megan Gelfgott, the thing we're talking about, because this is a little passion project of ours, is 99%, probably more, 99.9% of the population has no interest in getting on stage, and most of America doesn't have any interest in training, because unless you have a screw loose, who wants to go to the gym and make their body hurt, you know? But with America heading the way it is and so many health crises, how do we help the other 99% of the population? So, you know, me and Megan, let's take our skills and our passions and let's apply that to something that's applicable for everyone. So out of this, Iron Will Lifestyle was born. And the point of Iron Will Lifestyle is creating nutritional guidelines and programming templates that can be used by a novice gym goer or someone who's experienced, but backing it with a support community. Because the reason why most people fail is because they don't have the support they need to keep going. Because dieting is only easy for about 4 weeks if you're just getting started, you know. And then when you start losing fat, your body starts fighting you. You instantly want to go back to your old ways of eating. So most people want to belong. And so what we're doing with Iron Will is we're creating, you know, our Iron Tribe, a community of people that are all striving for the same thing, that will be there to support each other. But then on the actual scientific and practical side of this is we have to give you good programming that's going to work, that's going to stimulate the muscles, that's going to burn fat. We have to give you nutritional counseling that's going to also, burn fat, build muscle. So with Iron Will Lifestyle, we just launched our first 6-week trainer called Chasing Iron Will. And the great thing about it is, you know, me and Megan want people to get healthy, and we want America to get healthy. So with Chasing Iron Will, people who enter before this upcoming Monday for the 6-week transformation challenge, there's $1,000 up for grabs. So y'all may want $1,000.
Wow.
you know, because we're really trying to take America and then the world by storm. It's and not even from a business perspective of being imperialistic. Like, we want to help people. Like, I'm really good at what I do, but I can only help so many people with one-on-one attention. You know what I'm saying? So it's how do we reach the masses? And Iron Will Lifestyle is what we've come up with. And like I said, it's a passion project just out of loving people. So that's what we're here to do.
Well, I think that sounds very exciting. And I know that that falls along a line with what, you know, P4P stands for as well, for the, on the athlete's end, but also just helping people become, you know, better and more healthy in any way that they can. So I hats off to you for all that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. And for anyone out there who's listening, for, you know, if you're interested in the C620 nutrition side of things, the website is www.c620nutrition.com. And for those of you who may be interested in Iron Will, or have probably more of you will have friends and family that you know need to take control of their health, send them to ironwilllifestyle.com.
Awesome. Hey, and if you – oh, go ahead, Kaylin.
No, I was going to have him send me a link so we – well, or you a link so we can post it on the Midwest Muscle page.
Yep, and actually I've got both of those websites posted in the description on P4P Real Talk. So we can find them there, but I'll definitely make sure that you get the link. So, Brian, thank you so much for joining us tonight and enlightening us more on the nutrition aspect of things, which is so very important to athletes and just to our health in general. So, wish you the best
Man,
of luck
thank you
everything
so,
that
yeah.
you have going on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. It was a pleasure. Kaylin, it was great to meet you, man. Dez, it was good to talk to you again. And thank you guys so much for having me on. I appreciate it so much.
Thank
you. We loved it. So on behalf of Brian, Kaylin, and myself, your body is a temple, so let's build it.